Voices of the Temple, official podcast of the Temple of Witchcraft, exploring mystery and magic through love, will, and wisdom, hosted by Adam Sartwell. Greetings, and welcome to Voices of the Temple. It's been a while since we've gotten together here on the airwaves, and I'll just start us out with our invocation before I get into all of that. Take a deep breath with me. I call to the Great Spirit. I call to the two who move as one, through the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. I call upon the goddess, maiden, mother, crone, past, present, and future, creator, sustainer, and destroyer, weaver of the web. I call to the God, Lord of light and Lord of darkness, God of the green and the gold, God of the horn and the red, singer of the song. Be with us now and forever, forever, so mote it be. All right, so I'm glad to have gotten back onto the airwaves finally. It took me a little longer for this one. We were very busy during October doing both. Copper Cauldron came out with its book, The Three Rays of Witchcraft, by Christopher. And, you know, I'm part of Copper Cauldron, so I had to go to some of the events for that. There were signings and stuff like that. And, you know, I had to go and help sell books or deliver books or whatnot. So there was a lot of busyness. We had a lot of great events out there promoting the book, which was really cool. And of course, there's Samhain, which is quite an undertaking in itself. We had 96 people, not counting the staff, in the Masonic Hall. It was very, very crowded, and I was amazed that we pulled off a spiral dance. And I got a lot of flack from people for not having out the Libra podcast, you know, in a timely manner. So I had to say, well, I've been busy. And also, the Libra minister, who I was trying to get a hold of, was also very busy with his own things. But I did nail down a date with him on our retreat weekend for the council members. You know, all of the arch ministers out there. Christian is the Libra minister, and he is one of the other people who still uses the arch, even though it was never really officially used. But we both thought it was a really great idea to use arch instead, because, you know, I don't know, I just like saying arch instead of lead minister. It makes me feel like I'm leading some sort of board member group or something. So let's see, what other exciting things can I tell you about? We had a great time at our retreat weekend. Got to see what a lot of people have been doing with their time for the temple, and what we're going to do in the future, which I thought was really exciting. A lot of people's plans were really well put together and very excellent. There were some changes to some of the ministries, because in the future we're going to want to expand and grow, and just like, you know, humans do, our ministries may do that as well. So we discussed that, and we had this amazing lunch that was put on by everyone. And the great thing about it is everything that was cooked for us on that lunch was a recipe that will be put into a cookbook, which will later come out, called, I think it's Tastes of the Temple. was the idea that they came together, and that's one of the Copper Cauldron products that will, most of the proceeds to will go to the temple. So hopefully we'll see that next year, or whenever it's done. What other exciting things? Samhain was great. I had a fabulous time. And I was so happy. Usually, like the past couple of years in a row, I have gotten the worst. Like, we do this card divination in the ritual, and I always get the worst cards. I have gotten, like, the Tower, the Devil, like, many, like, in a row. Where I got these horrible, horrible cards, and I was like, why? But this year, I got passed a card, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to take one, because, you know, I've been burned in the past. But I took it, and I got the Temperance card, which I have always loved. I love working with angels, and it's kind of cool that that came to me before the Libra podcast was put together, because we do talk about angels and Christianity and how witchcraft can be mixed with those things in my interview with Christian. But I was like, oh, I'm so excited to, you know, learn how to balance instead of having to, you know, learn how to pick through the ruins of my life. but yeah, so that was good for me. Other people did come up to me to get, you know, interpretations of their own cards, which was really cool. And we did really, really well. I loved that there was so much food donated. I think it was 127 pounds. I'm not sure. But it was a lot. And there were so many people just happy to be, you know. But, well, Samhain is always happy and sad at the same time. It's kind of a paradox, because everyone's sort of, you know, thinking of the people that we've lost, the ancestors, and yet still celebrating their life and our life and sharing our community with each other. It was really beautiful. So I'd like to move right along into our interview, but first I have to tell you a little story. I made a date to record this podcast when I had a day off from work, and I drove down to where Christian lives, and I try to use Murphy's Law in reverse, so I give myself way too much time to get to a place, because you never know what's going to go wrong, and if I give myself that extra time, I'll get there exactly on time and never get lost. So if I give myself the get lost time, I never actually get lost. If I don't, then I usually get lost. So I got there on an hour ahead of schedule, and I was like, well, what do I do? So I whip out my phone, and I'm sure some of you may be jealous because I have an iPhone, and I was looking at my iPhone and looking, and there was a park nearby. So I got out of my car after I parked, and, you know, not before. Anyway, so I walked down to the park, and I had this, it was really, it was kind of like a, you know, a sports park. There were lots of sports going on. There were some kids playing football. There was some kids playing what I assume is like spud, because they kept throwing the ball up in the air. And I sat down and I did a little, you know, reading on the spirits of the land there, because I had all the time in the world there. And I was walking back, and as I was walking, I was thinking about the temple and, you know, how, what would be cool, what we could do in the future. And I was thinking of a suggestion that I should make to Christian, because he's kind of a financial whiz, to have a class on managing finances and how to plan out your life a little bit better, and, you know, things that I thought would be, you know, useful to some pagans, even me, because I'm horrible at planning things. And I turn the corner, and there's a turkey looking at me. And now, turkey to me is synchronicity, so I took that as a message that I should tell Christian about this, and we should talk about it. And we did talk about it after the interview. But I look, and the turkey's looking at me funny, and there are other turkeys pecking about in this person's yard, and this is one of the streets to get back to Christian's house. So I was like, oh, okay. So the turkey's kind of looking at me, and it's about, I don't know, 3 or 4 yards away from me, and so I'm like, okay, well, I'll just walk on forward. So I start walking forward, and he makes this weird, like, sound at me, and I'm like, and then he started to walk slowly forward towards me, and I thought, I don't know, do I want to go down this street? And through my mind is running all the things like, have I ever seen someone get attacked by a turkey on TV? Have I, you know, thinking about, like, is this turkey trying to try and take me on? And I'm like, I could probably kill this bird if I really, you know, needed to. But I was like, I don't want to, like, get scratched up or, you know, have it bite me with its beak, because I had a horrible experience with a parrot once where it, like, tried to bite my finger off. So I'm like, I don't really want to, you know, spend the energy fighting with this bird. So I turned around and left. I was kind of afraid it was going to follow me, because it like moved towards me after that. And I was like, okay. So I braved wild turkeys to get this podcast out. I just want you all to know that that is my dedication right there, that I braved attack turkeys to get this podcast out. But Christian told me that later that there are like 14 of those birds, and usually there are 2 birds that are like attack turkeys that protect their little flock. I was going to say herd, but I'm sure it's flock. and you know, they protect it and look out for everyone else, and I guess they take on cars and all of that. And I was telling this to one of my friends, and he said that, this is complete hearsay, I didn't look it up to make sure if it was true or not, that I guess their back talon has some sort of, like, poison to it, or a poison sac. I'm like, that's crazy. But, yes, yeah, so I braved wild turkeys to get this podcast out. And I have pictures, so they're not really good pictures, but I'll put them on the podcast so that you can look at them. But without further ado, I will get on to having our interview with Christian. Hi, listeners. I'm here with Christian, our Libra minister, for our Libra podcast. I know I'm a little late this on this one, but Samhain was very busy for the temple, and I also was working with Copper Cauldron to help them with their 3 Rays book. Christian, if you want to say hello.
Hey, Adam, how are you?
So, to sort of get on with the show, so to speak, we'll ask Christian a couple of questions and see what he has to answer. So, Christian, what does the Libra Ministry do?
Sure. Well, thanks, Adam. Thanks for coming by. The Libra Ministry does a number of things for the temple. So the archetype for the Libra Ministry is the archetype of the judge. And so from that theme, a number of things come. So I think rather than establish this idea of a judge, like somebody who stands back and judges others, we've tried to theme it as something much more egalitarian and much more cooperative. Mm-hmm. So one of our big responsibilities is to do mediation within the temple. And that's something I think that we're looking at to maybe have some people that are qualified mediators in the future as we grow. Mm-hmm. But the idea for right now is, should there ever be any conflict within the temple, that grievance can be brought to the Libra Ministry, and Libra Ministry will help people work out some kind of a cooperative solution to it. Mm-hmm. You know, as we begin, we hope we don't have that many opportunities, but I think in any organization, you eventually run into some things, and we want to be there as a resource to help people get over that. So we'd also like to offer ourselves as a resource for the community in general, so that if the magical community, especially the witchcraft community, is looking for some mediators, we'll be there as a resource. We're not holding ourselves out as people who are specially trained or qualified or certified by any outside body, but we are holding ourselves out as people who know the magical community, and therefore are sensitive to the issues there, and are expecting the kinds of issues that you might find in that community. So that's one aspect of it, and as you know, all the ministries have multiple aspects.
Yeah. Mine included.
Yeah, as you well know, more than anybody, maybe. So another aspect of what we do is sort of press, and that itself divides into a number of things. One thing I'm trying to do is keep a database of where witchcraft appears in the news, for good or for bad. We just want to be able to understand the perception of witchcraft out in the news. We want to be tuned into positive things as well. We want to be able to gauge public perception and evolving public perception, just to know where witchcraft stands in the eyes of the mainstream press, and just keep sort of our finger on the pulse there. And also allied with that is the idea that we should also be a resource to speak to the press, and that's something we're sort of just turning to and developing now. We really haven't done that a lot, but you know, literally if there's a need for it, we'd be prepared to help write press releases, for example. I think we missed an opportunity to respond to the whole Christine O'Donnell situation when witchcraft became an issue. I know I missed, I didn't realize how quickly that was going to flare up into a national issue. I thought that was going to come and go really quickly. And then it became something that stuck around. And it's too bad because I think there was no reason for her to drag the good name of witchcraft through the mud. when I don't think she was actually talking about the craft as, I know, not the craft that I've ever experienced. And not the craft that I think the temple is interested in, or... I think she was furthering ugly stereotypes, and it would have been good for us to be out there responding to it. So, you know, that's kind of, that's the wake-up call. So that's something that we need to think about. And I know Chris Penzack felt the same way. But, you know, it was at a season when things were very busy, and then very quickly other voices came in and drowned out everybody else. So.
It was kind of funny because I heard about it because Saturday Night Live, I guess, did a spoof on it, and so did Elvira. If you look it up on the internet,
I would love to see that. I would love to. I didn't see that.
It's hilarious. not for children, but definitely for adults to laugh at. Yeah, the whole thing was very hilarious in that way. And I feel like she kind of, I don't know if she won at all. She didn't win at all.
She did not. No.
Yeah. It kind of shot her in the foot to say those things. So, you know, hundreds of witches, you know, directing their energy, I would assume.
Exactly. So let me also just put a plug in here while we're talking about that subject, you know. Without opening the floodgates hugely, if your podcast listeners find articles about witchcraft and about witchcraft goings-on in their local community, I'd love to have them sent to the Libra Ministry email address. Not so much like announcements of events in their communities, because those are going to come and go, but you know, opinion articles or things that are that you know they think might be needed to be added to our long-term archives, that'd be really helpful. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Things that have hit the major press.
Even the local press, if it's an opinion piece, you know. So yeah, I may have just opened the floodgates hugely, but...
Well, if they wanted to send it to you, they'd send it to Libra at templeofwitchcraft.org.
Exactly.
And you'd receive it. And,
I would, yep.
You know, sort it as you will, even if it's the trash bin. So,
Other than that, does Libra do anything else? Or
that's the primary stuff that we're focused on right now. I know that there's talk about in the future being an out, sort of a focus point for interfaith outreach. And I'd be personally really interested in that.
So how do you feel? I know that that is coming up as a change. Do you, how do you feel that you could best go about doing interfaith collaboration?
That's a really good, that's a really interesting thing, and I think it's something we need to talk about with a larger group. My own personal opinions are that with, at least within the magical community, we can do some tremendously important outreach. I'm of the opinion, and I think most people involved with the temple are, that we should be forging much stronger links with other groups.
Yeah.
The broader magical community includes people from the ceremonial community, people who have, and with, within witchcraft, you've got neo-pagans, you've got people who are much more earth-based, you've got people who are much more on the ceremonial side within witchcraft. And there are already specific groups that are already organized. I'm thinking of Wes. And I think we need to come together as a larger group because, in my opinion so far, the witchcraft community, the magical community in general, is still sort of a little bit second-class citizens. You know, if Christine O'Donnell's comments had been made about another faith, and were disparaging in the way they were, I'm not so sure that she wouldn't have been, had other groups, you know, with major, there could have been a major negative backlash. And it didn't feel as if anybody was standing up and saying, I'm really insulted that you're saying that about my faith. So I think that, you know, I'm jumping way ahead because I think interfaith relations begin to build our own community more strong locally. And then I think it leads to greater things down you know, downstream, down the road, exactly, where there's a stronger sense of advocacy. And I think building a community is critical at all levels.
Yeah. It really is. So, talking about that, you come from more of a ceremonial background. How do you think that affects the way you approach your craft and your ministry as a whole?
Well, a couple of different things. First of all, you're absolutely right. I come from more of a ceremonial group, much more sort of lodge-based, sort of like great-grandchildren, great-stepchild of like the Golden Dawn tradition, and more broadly speaking, the Western mystery tradition. And I think that that obviously colors my view of the craft, because I tend to be really ritually based. The nice thing about that is that immediately the balance comes because I think some of the best, most naturalistic, most sort of enlivening things that I've done have been witchcraft-based. When I've been involved with rituals that are not about highly structured ceremony, or in even interior visions where it's much more about the natural, much more about getting out into nature, they've been really fulfilling. So, yes, I come from a ceremonial background, which I love, but I, you know, participating in the craft has also helped balance me out, and I see that as an incredible power of witchcraft. And I also sense that, having been a student of Christopher's, I know his view is very inclusive, very eclectic, and he sees witchcraft as a broad header under which you can draw many traditions. And that's why I think I enjoyed being a student of his for so many years, because I feel the same way. So I tend to draw it under the rubric of ritual. He draws it under the rubric of witchcraft, and I think it's just the same, you know, different label for the same themes, which are broad inclusiveness of a magical tradition that fulfills you as a person, and helps you get beyond the sort of orthodox faith that a lot of us were brought up with, and into something that's personally empowering and self-fulfilling and helps you achieve what you need to for spiritual growth. And it starts, I think, with individual spiritual growth, but then you start to form communities, and that's where you get support and help and grow that way. So I know I've been all over the place. Did that sort of get at what you were asking in any way?
I think so. I mean, do you Do you define yourself as a witch?
You know, that's funny. I think the short answer would be no, because I'm a label avoider in general. Mm-hmm. But if you take the sort of broad way that I've been taught to think about witchcraft, you could stretch it to say yes. Mm-hmm. You know, a person who deals with magic, a person who deals with the natural world, these are all things I think we have to include. We have to have these energies in our lives if we're going to be complete spiritual people.
Yeah.
So yes, in that way, definitely. Mm-hmm. If you had to say, okay, you know, what are the primary things you're working with in a ceremony, I think I'd probably first have to label myself, you know, what's traditionally called a ceremonial magician, mm-hmm. and go from there.
Yeah.
But I have a great love for the craft. I have a great love for the people who identify themselves as witches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I see them as kindred spirits on the same journey, but tuned into a slightly different frequency, and maybe their path is, like, just over parallel to mine,
mm-hmm, yeah,
kind of thing.
So, do you, what brought you to ceremonial magic, witchcraft, that blend?
You know, like so many people, you feel this urge and this pull, mm-hmm. and I was never one that was really rebellious against my own faith, the faith I was raised in, mm-hmm. but I felt like there was something more I needed to do, and something, and like so many people, you begin by reading, you begin by buying books and buying your first tarot deck and hanging mm-hmm. out at your favorite occult bookshop, which for me was Unicorn Books, which I miss mm-hmm. so much there. you know, so many years in the old Arlington Heights location, which was such a shrine for so many people, and such a precious place for so many people. By the way, that's a very important lesson, I think, that you can't hold on to things forever, so you better appreciate them while you've got them.
Yeah.
But that's not to say we move on and we grow. So being there introduced me to a lot of people who are, to this day, really dear friends, and mm-hmm. one of those was Christopher, who was, when beginning his practice, was there a lot and was teaching out of there a lot, and started taking classes with him. And really, witchcraft was the first time I started to work with other people and started to do more than just read and get my nose out of the books mm-hmm. and start to do things. But it was fate. It was the universe pointing me into my overall destiny, because as Christopher, as a teacher, wasn't an orthodox witchcraft teacher. Mm-hmm. You know, he was teaching elements of ceremonial magician blended in. He was teaching angelic work blended in. He was teaching things. But perhaps most importantly, he teaches his students to learn for themselves.
Yeah.
The old expression, he doesn't give you a fish, he mm-hmm. teaches you to fish.
Yeah.
So for me, it was great to be given the permission and the set of tools to go find out my own magical path. And even before I started working with him, I knew I wanted to be in some kind of a traditional ceremonial lodge. And I was always bugging him, hey, do you know anybody? You know everybody. Do you know anybody? And he didn't, but he kind of clued me in, and I poked around, and I eventually found those resources, and I wound up through the Theosophical Society in Boston, which to this day remains a great resource. I found a magical order that was a terrific way for me to start on the path.
Cool.
So.
Wow, sounds like a cool path. let's see. What else do I have on my little sheet here? What does, I know that I don't have this question on here, but it's a question I ask a lot. What does your personal daily practice look like?
Oh, okay. It varies throughout the day, and it could sound a little rigid, but in truth there's more flexibility to it than it sounds. So generally, the first thing I do when I wake up after putting the coffee on is like, if
that's
it's
a ritual in itself.
Yeah, exactly. is if it's at all possible, I get outside and I face the east and greet the sun. Mm-hmm. So, and if it's pouring rain or if it's snowing, I can just do that inside. If you can get outside, all the better. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the sun as a symbol of the sort of transcendent for all of the divinities that have been identified with the sun, and that abstract divinity that I think is behind and beyond all of them, beyond all shapes and forms, mm-hmm. and acknowledging that, you know, welcome, this day is the greatest day because it's the present, and mm-hmm. all of that transcendent is within each one of us, and thank you for this next day, and mm-hmm. and, you know, and here we go. For, you know, the adventure of a life is the adventure of the very next day. So I do that at it's supposed to be sunrise, noon, and sunset. It's more waking up midday and going to bed, mm-hmm. which I think is true for most people who have a practice like that. And I know a lot of people do something like that. And I try to do between 20 minutes and 25 minutes of meditation every day. And I have sort of a rotation of different symbolic things that I go through, and that's over time that's evolved, and depending on the organizations and teachers that I've been involved with, that practice has changed over time. Mm-hmm. Then there's also some work I do for healing for others and for myself, and then if there are any special things that I need to do, any special magical projects that I'm working on, I try to set aside time for that, and that usually happens during the weekend. So, and then, you know, if I can, I'll try to attend a Wheel of the Year. Obviously, the best mm-hmm. Wheel of the Year celebrations are put on by the Temple of Witchcraft. And, you know, other celebrations that are significant, like the equinoxes and things like that, where there are certain ceremonial things that you do on those days. So, it sounds like it can be very structured, but I try to get in some time when I'm meditating and some time when I'm doing healing work for the world.
That's really very good. I like that.
Thank you.
Now, I know you work with angels in the angelic realms. Can you tell us about that? Do you have angels? Do angels have a place in witchcraft? And what angels do you feel close to and work with often?
Yeah. Great question. I get the whole theme. I get the idea. I'll try to keep it, you know, I'll try to not give this crazy answer. So, I mean, I think obviously yes, because again, without trying to get too abstract and too theoretical, my belief has always been that the pantheons are really representing, they're different masks for the same parts of the divine. Mm-hmm. I know that might be controversial, because I know witches sometimes feel like the deities that they're working with are specific, personal, unique deities, and I completely respect that.
Yeah.
And I think when you're dealing with the divine, you can have apparently contradictory things be an absolute reality, because that's the nature of the divine. Mm-hmm. But to me, the pantheons are different lenses, different cultural lenses for the same primal energies. And those primal energies, as expressed in the Judeo-Christian realm, and even back before that, to the traditions that it grew out of, mm-hmm. Are the angels. You know, you have Mikael, Michael, who's a warrior energy. Mm-hmm. You have Gabriel and Raphael, who represent other energies. You have Uriel, the light of God, who represents, you know, the magical and the ceremonial. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Raphael represents healing energy. Gabriel represents, you know, a messenger or a guide energy. And, you know, you could see analogies with, you know, okay, we have, some people might think it's a stretch. You've got the Mars and Athena energy, the warrior, the wise warrior mm-hmm. energy in the Olympian pantheon. You have Mercury or Hermes.
Yeah.
In that pantheon as a messenger and a guide.
Who shares different things in iconography that show, you know, like he has the staff with the serpents,
exactly.
And so does Raphael.
Exactly. Precisely. And then you've got Anubis, mm-hmm. also a messenger energy. So you've got different pantheons. So I see the angels as the Christian pantheon, as part of the Christian pantheon, mm-hmm. With the Christian God as the sort of transcendent part of that mm-hmm. that encompasses all, and that these are the manifestations of that energy in time and space, where the true divinity, perhaps for all pantheons, is something more abstract and more transcendent and outside of time and space. In Kabbalah, this is what goes through to the Ein Sof, the infinite darkness behind the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of thing. So yes, I think they have a place in witchcraft, because I think if you're a witch who's working really with that, you can substitute whatever pantheon you want. And I think as a magical practitioner, everybody should try to work with all those energies.
Mm-hmm. So do you have angels that you work with very often?
I have to admit that, it's very popular to say, but I'll say it anyway, Uriel. And mm-hmm. Uriel has always been a very violet ray kind of angel. Very, you know, the one who sort of supervises ceremonial magic. If you were to, that's a super oversimplification, but
mm-hmm. yeah.
That's the way I think of it. So has always been the guide for me, has always been an angel that I look to for protection and instruction and teaching. And there are even certain Christian saints that I feel have that same energy.
Mm-hmm.
St. Catherine of Alexandria jumps to mind, because there's this idea that, well, she was also sort of related to Hypatia,
mm-hmm.
who was a philosopher associated with the Great Library of Alexandria.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of energy that ceremonial magicians just love to tune into. And that place where multiple faiths came together
mm-hmm.
and were exchanging ideas, to me, is always very powerful, where, although later in its history became very controversial and there was a lot of dissension and fighting, at its height, and maybe it's just mythologically, but it was where faiths came together to seek the transcendent faith, the transcendent philosophy that unifies everything. And to me, that's a very powerful, very beautiful notion to go for. So that's what I'm always trying to tune into. And, you know, Uriel can help you do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hermes can help you do that.
Yeah. I think even if Alexandria, if that didn't happen in Alexandria, it's a thought form that we can tap into to bring into manifestation here and now.
I completely agree. And need to nourish.
Yeah,
and a thought form that we need to nourish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. What have I not asked?
I'm loving your questions, by the way.
Thank you. All right. Do you feel that witchcraft is at odds with Christianity, or do you think it's the other way around?
Okay. I'll just say it. I think there are people within Christianity
mm-hmm.
that are at odds with witchcraft.
Yeah.
And the corollary to that is there are probably people within witchcraft that are at odds with Christianity.
Yes.
As faiths, if you get through to them, if you get through to the highest octaves of all those faiths, as I've just been saying, you know, many times in this discussion, I really think that, you know, all faiths ultimately should come together and blend, and you should look for the similarities.
Mm-hmm.
As they manifest on Earth.
Yeah.
There are disagreements. As they manifest through practitioners, through people,
mm-hmm.
through our flawed human personalities,
yeah.
can there be conflict? Yes. Are there conflicts? Yes. Hugely. Have they been worse in times past? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, hugely. So, you know, even if I see conflict today, I'm still happy that we're not burning each other, and we're not, you know what I mean, from... So I hold out hope that we are continuing to evolve
mm-hmm.
as humanity. Am I alarmed when I see fundamentalism of any kind in any faith assert itself and start to become exclusive and start to control people's minds? Yes, obviously. And that's the source of hate, and that's the source of dissension, that's the source of conflict. So... in a way, I realize I've just avoided the entire question, but mm-hmm. in a way, that's how I see it. So,
what I wanted to say about that was Christianity isn't complete. There are some people out there who are Christo-pagans. That's what they call themselves. And there are some Christian witches. And I find that it's very interesting to me, because it's not my worldview. All the time. Though I do see the blessings in both. I find it interesting how there are things in both of our faiths that combine to really show the higher octaves of the one. Well, I know the one is controversial to some people too, but I feel like there is a great oneness and coagulation, if you must.
Yeah.
you know what you mean. When you get into the higher octaves, to go into an alchemy way of saying it, that span our personal things. And I know there are a lot of people out there who are probably listening to this podcast who have been hurt by some of the things in Christianity, or vice versa, for witchcraft, that they have to realize that that was their own personal hit with the people, not with Christianity as a whole. So.
Yeah, it's very difficult. You know, it's very difficult for people to look at Christianity and knowing its history and knowing that there was this huge swath of history in Europe, in Western Europe, when it had total hegemony, and if you disagreed with it, your life was in jeopardy. That's a hard karma for it to get over. I would ask people also to think of the very early days of Christianity when it was the prosecuted faith. And in a way, I have this great, and perhaps it's you know, apocryphal, perhaps it's a romantic notion of it, but I have this feeling that it must have been very powerful and very beautiful to be those very early Christians running around in the crypts with your fellow compatriots, sharing a simple meal of bread and wine and the fellowship, and, you know, trading who was going to be the priest for that day, and the simplicity, the unity that was coming from that. I think that in some ways the most manifest, the most simple, the most primitive form might have also been the most beautiful and the most enriching for their souls. And it's, that is a, you know, that's something I try to plug into when I think about Christianity, rather than, you know, what you see when you see them doing these ceremonies at the Vatican that are just these gold gilt things, and you think, you know,
the word you're searching for is opulent.
Precisely. Beyond opulent. And you think, how are they connecting with the divine that way? You know, and there are a lot of people that do. And I try to make it a philosophy of mine never to you know, criticize other people's faiths. But I think you have to criticize the parts that you disagree with. You have to, you have to stand in your truth. So.
So, I don't know if you know this, but coming up, the full moon circles for the temple go to a different pantheon every month, and I believe it's January, don't quote me on that, but they are going to do the Christian pantheon.
I had just recently heard that. Alex, the person who runs those gatherings, told me about that, and I told her, count me in. I'm definitely in for that.
Just so you know, people who are Christo pagan witches out there know the temple does, you know, put you under our umbrella. So I think that wraps up most of my questions. So we'll say goodbye, viewers.
Great. Adam, it's been really nice talking with you, and I look forward to your other podcasts and maybe coming back in the future sometime. Great.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for listening. It's been a great time. I hope that you enjoyed my interview with Christian and our discussion about where Christianity and paganism meet and can they get along. And I hope that you enjoyed all the podcast. And I guess we'll do our devocation and say goodbye. We thank the Great Spirit and the two who move as one. We thank the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. We thank the God and Goddess who move through us and work with us. May we recognize your presence in our lives. Blessed be. Merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be, everyone. You've been listening to Voices of the Temple. The contents of this podcast are copyright 2010 of the Temple of Witchcraft. For more information, please visit templeofwitchcraft.org.